The power of psychic energy. In a moment, Keith Miller joins us as we talk about his latest work, Subtle Energy, a handbook of psychic energy manipulation. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you about Keith Miller, psychic teacher, researcher, and author about paranormal topics. His latest work is Subtle Energy. He has been involved in esoteric and occult communities since his youth. From a young age, he has been involved in teaching people to develop their own psychic abilities. He holds a master's degree in transpersonal psychology from Atlantic University, a bachelor's in psychology from Ohio University, and in addition to studying parapsychology and the paranormal, he's also studied a number of different ritual magic and sorcery traditions from around the world. Keith, it's great to have you with us. Welcome.
George, thanks for having me on, and thanks for the introduction there. It's wonderful.
I'm looking forward to this. How did this all start for you?
So, you know, when I was a kid, I usually say I was just kind of too dumb to realize that something was going on that other people didn't have going on. And, you know, a lot of kids, when they're young, they see spirits or they talk to ghosts or whatever like that, and they kind of grow out of it. You know, their parents kind of tell them, hey, look under the bed. You don't see anything there. There's nothing there.
Right.
And kids learn to go like that. And I like to say, like I said, I was just a little bit too dumb, a little too slow to figure out that I should be paying attention to my physical senses more. So that kind of started with me, and I had all these kind of weird psychic experiences that it took me a while to figure out were something that other people weren't having, right? And along the way, people would ask me, okay, well, can you teach me to do this? You know, they'd figure out it. Mm-hmm. And I can tell if somebody's lying or something. They'd say, well, can you teach me to do this? And when I was a kid, you know, again, you know, in our hubris, we'll say something like, well, yeah, let me tell you. And they'll say, well, can you teach me how to, like, read a mind? Okay, well, yeah, just listen to what's going on in the other person's mind. Well, okay, that doesn't help anybody. So basically, that stuck with me for a long time. I was involved in the like late 90s, early 2000s. I would teach online and things like this. But I wasn't very effective at it because there hasn't been a lot of research in how people learn these skills. And so that's what I went to Atlantic to study, was to look at how people can develop psychic skills particularly. Because we know how to teach people, and we know generally about psychic ability, but up until very recently, there hasn't been a lot of work done on how do we actually teach psychic skills specifically.
And we've all got the ability, don't we?
That's right, yes. I have yet to meet, and I've met a lot of people who say that, you know, I'm not psychic, I don't have any ability or anything like that. I've yet to meet somebody for whom that's actually true. I'm not going to say definitively, you know, oh, absolutely, everybody has, you know, the ability. But I'm not going to say, you know, the vast majority of people, nobody I've ever met hasn't been able to do something, right? And there's a lot of research that's gone into this that shows most people have had some kind of psychic experience, right? Ian Stevenson in the 70s down at UVA did a lot of research and showed the vast majority of people have had the experience, for example, where they go to pick up the phone to call somebody, and at that moment, you know, that person's calling them. And that's fundamentally, this is, you know, a psychic ability, and it's just a matter of whether or not we've practiced that. So what I like to tell people, you know, it's a lot like super tasting, right? You have these guys that can, like, taste an incredible small details, like fine things in foods or in wines, for example, that I can't taste, for example. And if they practice, right, they can become like a sommelier. They can become really good at like tasting wine and identifying what regions they come from and things like that. But if they don't practice it, then they just have this, they can taste something, but they can't do anything with it. And at the same time, somebody who's not a super taster, right, somebody who's just a normal guy with a mouth, right, who could taste, if they practice and they train and they, you know, taste all these different regions of wine and so on, they can get very good, and they'd actually be better than the person who's a super taster without who doesn't have any training, right? So an average person with just an average amount of psychic ability who doesn't even consider themselves a psychic, who practices and trains, will often get much better results when we actually look at their performance on general ESP tasks or things like that. They can get much better results after they've done some kind of practice, after they've done some kind of training, than somebody who is naturally very, very psychic, but hasn't actually practiced it or developed it in any way.
I was going to say, Keith, what gives the natural people with this incredible ability, what gives them that upper hand over someone who's got the ability but can't use it?
So there's a couple different factors that can go into the ability to perform psychically. And you know, I know there's been considerable research looking into genetic links or family links. There's been a lot of looking into spiritual links. There was a researcher named Beverly Napperstick wrote a book called Your Sixth Sense, and she talks about the basically five different ways that people will become active psychically. And in some portion of the population, it's people who are just born with it. It's people like myself who were just not savvy enough to put it away. When, like I said, most children, you know, children talk to spirits, children talk to things that aren't there, so to say, all the time. And that, you know, oftentimes those things actually are there, right? So it can be childhood experiences that just kind of lead to that perpetuating or lead to that sense being a little bit more developed. It can be things like trauma, where it's become a survival mechanism for somebody. You have people who have been raised in unfortunate circumstances or who have undergone traumatic experiences will sometimes kind of their traditional senses, you know, their normal five senses aren't cutting it. So they flip over and they start using this extrasensory perception to fill in gaps in order to keep themselves safe. That's a very common one, unfortunately. There are people who have experiences with what Rhea White would call an exceptional human experience, right? And this is any of these experiences like alien abductions, angelic visitations, or, you know, just any kind of strange, exceptional experience, cryptid sightings, things like this, UFO sightings, things like this can all, for whatever reason, can activate psychic ability a little bit. And people with, you know, who are in close proximity to spiritual teachers, gurus, things like that, often report that their ability heightens. As for the mechanism, you know, we don't have the technology right now where we can study this subtle energy or psychic energy in a way that is objective, right? So it's very difficult for me to say something definitive. I'm reluctant to say definitive things because we still have a lot to learn about what's going on. But those are the kind of the trends that can lead towards people having a heightened ability versus, you know, an average person.
Have you met anybody, Keith, that just doesn't get it psychically and then somebody else who just picks up on it like that?
People who pick up on it like that are fairly common. It tends to be people who are... Well, it goes two ways, actually. There's people who are very, very, I want to say, sense-oriented, right? Very by the book, very regimented, scientific types will sometimes just pick these things up very, very easily. And also, at the same time, creative types, artists, and people who have already have a tendency to look at things a little bit differently, to be able to look at things slightly differently, can also pick these things up very quickly. People who struggle with it, the main thing about that is if you have, there are factors that go into improving learning. And one of the biggest one is openness to psychic experience. And that's been borne out through research since way back to the 50s, it's shown that people who come from what we call psi-believing cultures tend to already have or report higher incidence of psychic experiences from the beginning. And they also tend to be more open to learning it. So if you point out, okay, well, this was a little psychic experience, they can start picking out more and more things like that. And through recognizing it, through recognizing these mental activities, they will start. We start telling our. It basically tells our brain, like, "Hey, I want more of this," right? And so our brain finds that. So people who are closed to it, people who are side disbelieving, people who say, "Oh no, there's no psychic ability at all," they have a very hard time kind of learning it. So long as they are. Because they kind of interfere with it themselves. They kind of block it themselves. If there's an effect called a null psi effect that we see in research sometimes, where if an experimenter, if a researcher, the actual guy running the experiment, right, not the subject, if the actual guy running the experiment doesn't believe in psi, and he's got essentially an agenda to try to disprove it.
Or we'll actually skeptic, find it, right?
Yeah, a skeptic, more than a skeptic. Because, you know, a skeptic can be a good thing. Right, a skeptic can be somebody who's just like, I'm not sure, and I want to see. But there's people who go into it who
debunkers
is the right term, yeah. And when debunkers are doing these things, they will run these studies, and what we find is this null psi effect shows a statistically abnormal absence of psychic ability. So say you're doing like a Zener card test, right, and you're just doing the five traditional five card flip general ESP test, right. And you would expect by chance that somebody would get that right 20% of the time. Just by chance, they should be able to say star, square, whatever, and randomly they should get 20%. But with these debunkers, when they run these experiments, we're getting people like 1%, 2% of the time are right, 0% of the time are right. And that's a statistically significant score in the opposite direction. That's a score that shows that there's not psychic happening to a degree that is paranormal. And so that openness is very, very important. For in my personal work, the people who I've run into who simply don't develop are usually, it's uncommon. They're usually, I think, maybe trying too hard, because another factor is this factor of kind of, you want to take it lightly. Mindset is huge for learning any skill. And since psychic ability is like a skill, if you don't have a good mindset for learning, if you're very, very focused on the results and not paying attention to the process, then that can interfere in your ability to learn, essentially. That blocks your ability to develop the skill, because you're focused so much on getting that one specific goal or outcome.
Your subtitle of the book, Subtle Energy, is intriguing. A Handbook of Psychic Energy Manipulation. Tell me about that.
So, yeah, the manipulation term, I sometimes regret using that term, because I think people see psychic energy manipulation, and they think I'm talking about manipulating people.
Right.
And that's an unfortunate. The term psychic energy manipulation is what was taught to me when I was a child and I was looking for guidance on how this worked. But the reason for that term specifically, so that's why I included or continued using it, right, because of what I'm taught, and then I'm going to continue to teach along that path. But the distinction would be, say, something between that and, like, Reiki. Okay, so with Reiki, for example, that's a healing modality using energy, and a Reiki master doesn't really send the Reiki. They don't choose what it does. They don't shape it or work with it themselves. They're the conduit. They're the channel, and the Reiki energy flows through them and does what it needs to do in the client. And it's doing its own thing. It knows what it needs to do to heal somebody, because that's what that Reiki current is. It comes from this medicine Buddha practice from the Usui in Japan. And that is not intentional on the part of the Reiki master, right? They're simply allowing themselves to be a conduit, and they're putting themselves in a position to allow that to happen. With the subtle energy, with psychic energy manipulation, we're taking this and using it deliberately, right? This is a choice that I want to make something out of this kind of psychic energy. I want to do something with the psychic energy, and then I shape it how I want it. So I'm manipulating it, and then I'm working it almost as if with my hands, sometimes physically with my hands, in order to be or do what I want it to do, in order to have the shape I want it to have, in order to have the function that I want it to have, and so on.
That's amazing, the work that goes into this and the change that you see. I bet you've seen some dramatic change in people.
You know, I have. That's true. I've definitely seen. It's very empowering, I think, for a lot of people if they have that kind of experience of working with these kinds of things. If they being able to learn any skill, I think, is very empowering, and for a lot of people, that alone is very beneficial. It also, a lot of the practices that facilitate good psychic work are practices that can help us in our day-to-day life just psychologically, right, just normally, because one of the first things I teach to any new student, the very first exercise is meditation and concentration. These are two really important skills for this, because the meditation lets us identify what thoughts are our own, right? Habitually, we think that anything that happens in our head is going to be ours. And that's really not always the case, right? A lot of times that can be telepathic information or something, and we just don't recognize it as that. This is very common with people who, they'll call themselves empaths, right? So empathic people who feel the emotions of other people on a sense that's more real or more tangible to them, more visceral to them than just seeing somebody, and then sympathy, than seeing somebody who's sad and going, oh, I'm also sad, right? And that meditation lets us identify, okay, this is my emotion and this is their emotion that I'm experiencing. And then that concentration is necessary to kind of, especially with subtle energy work, to be able to form the intention. And both of those things, both the meditative recognition, the mindfulness of what's going on in your own mind and the outside world at the same time, and the increase in attention, the ability to form an almost like a point that is a point of will or a point of intention, both of those are things that can transform people just in their own routine lives. To say nothing of their psychic development, yeah.
Keith Miller with us. His latest book is called Subtle Energy. Of course, you've got one out called Subtle Spirits, too, that came out about the same time, didn't it?
That came out. So Subtle Energy is a re-release, and that came out in 2019. As a re-release, that was after I'd finished my graduate work, and I wanted to update it with a lot of the things I'd learned. One of the downsides I find to print media is that once I've put it out there, I can't just publish an easy update. Like, oop, okay, here you go.
That's right. It's there.
I learned something. Right. Subtle Spirits was something that I had been toying with or playing with as a reaction to when I was writing Subtle Energy's re-release, when I was doing the editing work for background noise, I'd put on whatever paranormal ghost hunting show on Travel Channel or whatever, right? And they were yelling at these spirits all the time. they're harassing these spirits. And I found that that's not the best way. You catch more flies with honey than vinegar, right?
That's right.
And so I've always, in my work, been a much bigger fan of trying to bring spirits over to my side, have them. My household spirits, of which there are plenty, are ones that I've made agreements with now, right? Rather than being like, oh my gosh, there's a spirit here and they're haunting me and I need to get rid of them. It's been along the lines of, okay, well, you're going to be here and I'm going to be here and you might be here longer than me because I'm going to die eventually. And spirits, are much more, have more longevity than we do, usually. So I said, okay, well, if that's going to be the case, let's make a deal here, right? Let's make a deal. I'll do this and this, and you keep my plumbing unclogged. You keep my heaters running operational, you keep everything. So if you're going to haunt my house, do it usefully. And Subtle Spirits then became a book where I was kind of writing about that. So it goes into what types of spirits we tend to run into, and it goes into basically it's a primer on mediumship.
All right, hold on for a second, Keith. We're at a break. We'll come back and pick it up as we talk about your work in the psychic realm. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Keith Miller, latest book, Subtle Energy, the updated version. Keith, what would you say in the psychic realm has been one of the most fascinating aspects for you?
Wow, that's a broad one there.
Yeah.
Oh, So in the psychic realm, I mean, I'm a weirdly enough, I spent a lot of my time doing research mostly to prove to myself it was okay to believe in myself.
Mm-hmm. You studied this a lot.
I studied this stuff a lot. And a lot of this is, I guess, the most fascinating thing to me. Well, I'm going to answer, I guess, sideways here. I think the most fascinating thing to me is that despite the fact that we have just huge amounts of evidence, for this, mountains of statistical evidence that's essentially inarguable, there's still this sort of skepticism towards this or reluctance to study this in the broader scientific community. But I've always been mostly fascinated by, you know, Stargate and the remote viewing projects that the CIA and U.S. military were doing in the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, because it's so well documented. So that, for me, has always been fascinating because it's also, and also I find that with coordinate remote viewing methods, that's usually the most effective way. If you want to take somebody, you were asking earlier about people who you just run into, who just happen to easily kind of develop things, right, who just very easily learn once they start learning, right, beyond the average.
Very
quick learning. And that coordinate remote viewing method, if you want to take somebody who's never done anything psychic, doesn't believe that they're psychic, not closed off to psychics existing, because, like we said, that can be very detrimental, but just doesn't think they have it, and you run them through a remote viewing target or something like that in the traditional classical way, right? So it's very regimented, and it's designed, Ingo Swann designed that to get people out of their own way, essentially. That is incredibly effective, and to me, that's the most fascinating thing, is that these methods that aren't overtly spiritual, aren't overtly trying to do anything magical per se, right? They're just sit down, follow this protocol, write some stuff on a paper, and tremendously accurate on the first try almost every time. And that's always been fascinating to me. So that was really, you know, way back in 2001, I was maybe a freshman in high school. And this was before CIA had released that Stargate information on their website.
Right.
And that was one of my early exposures to all of this stuff, was I actually did my own FOIA request and requested all that information and combed through all that stuff. And that kind of led me to the study I did. But I have to say, that's probably, to me, it's such a broad question, what's the most fascinating thing? And like I said, the most fascinating thing is that we're still not really accepting this in the broader scientific community, despite so much evidence for it. But that's, you know, that's a glib answer. I guess the real thing that's always been my psychic love affair, I guess, is the psychic, the Stargate research.
The government's research.
The government's work, yeah, because it's so rigorous, and it doesn't get into any of the spiritual stuff, right? They were trying very hard to keep it very sterile. They didn't want it to be spiritual practice. There's elements of that in there. I mean, you have Monroe Method and things like this that they pulled from the Monroe Institute, and that's fundamentally spiritual in a way. But these guys weren't out here, you know, contacting spirits and asking them for help. They were doing this their own. This was their own psychic ability, and they were reaching out and getting that through their own efforts and through a protocol that was designed basically to get them out of their own way. The psychic ability is always there. The psychic ability is functioning there. The remote viewing protocols that they used in the U.S. government stuff used is almost entirely about getting the person's mind out of the way so that you can let the psychic functioning happen.
Was there anything that you've done in the psychic realm that you found to be scary? Something that might have been out of control and you were just wrestling with yourself?
When I was younger, I would have, you know, kids are dumb. I was a dumb kid. Maybe I was just dumb. I don't know. But when I was younger, I was 10 or 11, that age range. And at that point, I'd figured out that I was doing psychic stuff, right? I was starting to learn and starting to be very purposeful about figuring out what I was doing and what I was doing with it.
Right. Did others know that you knew?
Some. Not a lot. I think I'd mentioned it to my parents, and they just kind of gave it the brush off, kind of.
Right. As parents do most of the time with that.
Exactly. And so they'd kind of given a brush off. There were some people I knew at school I had talked to about it. A lot of people who knew me were like, well, yeah, obviously you're weird and psychic. Like, we know this, and it's creepy, and we just go with it. Like, it's just a weird thing you do. But in terms of the scary stuff you were asking, like, the thing that I had done was I started trying to reach. You know, I started trying to figure out, well, okay, I can figure out, I have a knack for knowing what people are thinking. So how many people can I do that with? How expansive can I get with that, at a time? And then, I'd kind of like pass out sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, I'd reach too much. It would be too much throughput, and I'd have, I don't know what I was going through physically because I'd like check out. I'd black out and come back too. And so those things were a little scary because that was kind of a wake-up call of like, oh, that was, oof, I shouldn't play with that too much. Let's not hurt ourselves here. I'm always relating this to skills, and I guess that would be the relation to, it was the equivalent to, well, I know I can lift weights, so let me just rack up 1,000 pounds on this bar and see if I can just pick it up. And I could not, it turns out. So that was scary. That was the thing that was frightening. Other things, I'm a little bit more comfortable with, right? I've been on paranormal investigations and ghost hunts, things like that, where we've had very real manifestations, but when other people are scared, I'm kind of like, hi.
What would you say your specialty is in the with the psychic powers?
Oh, my specialty with psychic powers.
Telepathy, astral projection, what?
So yeah, by nature, I guess, right? So my natural specialty, the thing that I did that let me know that I was doing this stuff in the first place, was mostly telepathy stuff, which is, I want to say for kind of a, put it out there on the telepathy stuff, because a lot of people have this impression that it's, the Stranger Things kind of like, exactly the words that somebody else has in their head, right? That you can hear their voice thinking their thoughts. And it doesn't usually function like that. Sometimes it does. Sometimes you get very, very clear, like, oh, okay, this is exactly right, what's going on in this person's inner monologue. But usually it's more a kind of just knowing.
Isn't it also you to them as opposed to them to you?
It can be, yeah. It can. It goes both ways. In reality, yes. In reality, I
used
to connection like that. Yeah.
In school, I used to sit behind a student or so, mm-hmm, thinking of the back of their head, wanting them to turn around and just acknowledge me,
right?
Just to see if it worked.
Right.
And, I would say 4 out of 6 times the person would turn around. I don't know if that's normal or what, but I concentrated on the back of their head and I kept thinking, turn. And 4 times out of 6, they would.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's not a uncommon thing. That kind of, we call it a telepathic suggestion, right? Or telepathic projection,
right,
when you're sending it out. My general impression with telepathy stuff, which I guess is really my specialization, is any kind of connection goes both ways, but a lot of times the other channel isn't paying attention. It's like, you have somebody on the phone and you tell them, this call is being recorded, and you only need one person to consent to that, right? Only one person gets that recording. But in theory, both the communication goes both ways. And the sending, the telepathic projection, it's my experience that people tend to strongly favor one or the other, right? They tend to be either very strong projectors, very strong broadcasters, or they tend to be very strong receivers if they're in that telepathic milieu. Like,
right,
they tend to specialize a little bit. I tend a little bit more towards the receptive side. I can do the projective stuff. I can do the turnaround kind of thing. But it takes me considerably more effort than it does to figure out. One of the things I ran into as a kid, one of the ways I keyed to that kind of thing is that I kept on having impulses to do things. And
what do you mean?
I guess like turning around.
Ah, okay.
I would have impulses I'd be in class and I'd have an impulse like, oh, I need to sharpen my pencil. And my pencil was totally sharp at that time. And I'd still have this impulse. And when I was very young, I'd just act on it. I'd just get up and start sharpening my pencil, even knowing.
Down to nothing, right?
Right. It's exactly. Even though I know that it's fine, I have this, like, I feel like I have to do it. It's because it's not my thought, right? And what I would realize is later is that it was other people had that kind of thing. I remember one time my mom was watching TV downstairs, and I went downstairs and was trying to find the remote to change the channel. And she's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Oh, well, I want to change the channel."
And, while she's watching something else,
she's watching. I was upstairs. I didn't even know what was on, but she had been wanting to change. You know, she was done with the show, and so that was the kind of.
So you picked up on her.
I picked up on her through this kind of passive. Incoming recipient telepathy, and she wasn't trying to send anything. You know, she wasn't trying to get. She was just sitting there watching the TV and thinking she was done with it. But that thought of I want to change this channel came through, right? And it came through to me at the time. I didn't have the wherewithal to realize like, oh, that's not mine. That wasn't my thought. And my suspicion is with a lot of people that's a common thing. That they don't recognize as a common thing because they don't have the mindfulness to recognize where their own thoughts are because it's not something we practice. It's not something you have to. There's a basic assumption that if I'm thinking something, it's coming from me. And the telepathy stuff, right? That telepathy exists indicates that that's not always the case. And so then the trick becomes identifying when it's from me and when it's not. So at the same time that you were staring at people, having them turn around, by thinking at them to do that, right? There are people that are out there who, without being stared at, are still turning around just because somebody wanted them to. Somebody thought about it.
Well, and why would I think about that at a young age of probably 12 to 14, something like that? What possessed me to even experiment like that?
Well, that's a question I think for you, George.
I can't answer it. I don't know why I did it. I was always fascinated in these things.
I think there's an innate fascination. I think there's an innate interest. I mean, the fact that the paranormal persists as something that we study, as something that we because on some level, I think we know it's there. I think that people recognize on some level that these kinds of psychic abilities exist. And whether that's from a kind of ancestral memory, I mean, we've been, as a species now, 10,000 years, we've been doing ritual and doing kinds of magic and things like that. I've studied a lot of different cultures in order to get an understanding of the paranormal stuff. And there are different approaches to what is essentially paranormal stuff, this different magic and so on. And whether it's because of that, whether it's because we know on some level that we can, and we simply feel the need to try it out, whether it's because of, again, one of those other reasons, a survival need or some kind of spiritual desire, I think almost everyone, I have a pet theory about the ghost TV shows because I talk to people in my daily life who don't know that of what I do, right? They don't know that I'm a psychic. They don't know what I do professionally in this regard, right? And I'll be talking to them, and if it comes up, sometimes I'll just bring it up. I'll be like, yeah, so, I do this weird stuff. And 9 out of 10 times, people will be like, oh, I have a ghost in my house. Oh, I have a spirit. I my grandpa.
They relate to this.
Following me. They relate to it. And the United States and most of Western Europe, actually, is what we would term psi non-believing, right? We're taught that this stuff isn't real. We're taught that we shouldn't be interested in this stuff. And yet that belief persists. And it's my hypothesis that pretty much everybody has had these kinds of psychic experiences, has some interest in these psychic experiences, has some kind of experience that it's simply taboo to talk about. It's simply that we're not supposed to bring this stuff up, because people will think we're a crackpot. People will think we're lunatics if we talk about our psychic ability or whatever.
What would you say in the psychic realm you specialize in?
In the psychic realm, my specialization would probably be the telepathy and consciousness.
Okay.
Stuff. Yeah. I also do a lot of astral projection work that I would consider, and remote viewing stuff is something I've practiced very heavily. So I would consider that a focus or something that I like to work with a lot. Although with remote viewing stuff, I'll defer. I mean, you've had Joe McMonagle, you've had Ed Dames, you've had some of these guys that were with the U.S. government.
Russell Targ, the works.
Russell Targ, Hal Puthoff, I don't know if he's been on the show.
Hal's been on.
Yeah, so these guys are you know, sort of heroes of mine, idols of mine, but I know them through their work, through their published work, and through their appearances and so on. So I would defer talking about that stuff to real experts, but I've learned a tremendous amount from them, and so I very much like doing that kind of work. I don't know that I would say I'm a specialist over somebody who's been involved in the development of those programs.
Are you glad you have these gifts?
Yeah, absolutely. I usually avoid using the term gifts because it flavors it, right? It gives it that spiritual flavor. But I wouldn't give them away. It's made my life exceptionally weird. It's made my life harder at times. Wrestling with, you know, whether or not I was insane, for example, wrestling with, is this stuff real, trying to convince myself.
Right.
That
am I delusional and all that.
Right. And being aware of the fact that, you know, because I studied psychology and going like, oh, well, you know, technically, I guess this is delusional if I can't prove it. And how do you prove it? How do you prove a thought, right? You can prove psychic functioning to a degree. But how do you prove that you had that experience, right? You can never really hit a burden of proof on an existential or a phenomenological.
Well, that's so true. We're going to come back, Keith, and take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.